Pat Egan has been in the Irish music business for just short of 50 years. The actual singing, dancing and playing he left to others and instead funneled his own drive into making it happen as both a concert promoter, poster kingpin, manager, venue owner and the man behind the counter at his eponymous record stores. Culture Files' Louis Scully went to meet him at his offices in Dublin's Merchants Quay to hear about life at the business end of rock and roll.
My name is Pat Egan. I have been involved in the entertainment business for 49 years and 9 months, thereabouts. I spent my whole life basically in the entertainment business in some shape or form. I left school at 13 and I went to work for a little while. Then I became a club disc jockey. And after that, it's just rolled on into everything from owning record shops and pubs to running concerts and managing artists and generally making a right idiot of myself some of the time. My grandmother got a new radio. I was about 13. I remember hearing Elvis Presley.
You're not going to stop a group of kids and young people and everything from having a nice time because they only grow up once.
The Drifters and various other bands, and I just thought, that's incredible. I'll have to have some of that. I got a job from John Coughlin, who was the managing editor of Spotlight magazine, which was a big show band weekly. They wanted to start a weekly column for beat groups because the beat groups were starting to surface and had a lot more kind of credibility than show bands had. So I was delighted. I got £3.50 a week and I would have did it for nothing. Nobody realised that I left school at 13 and hardly could write my name properly. First gig I promoted was a group called Steel Eyes Spam. So I did, I promoted them in the boxing stadium and I think I lost money, can't remember. Lay still my farm shepherd, don't you rise yet. I wanted to be in show business because of the buzz of it, because of the, you know, the girls, the fancy costume, but it's not show business anymore. It's just a completely different market. There is no, you can't fish in the pond anymore. The fish in the pond are too big. The Live Nations, the MCDs, Aikens, they're so competitive together. Bob Marley in Dalymount was 1980. It was the last outdoor concert he ever played. We, I think, only told the police up in Mountjoy police station, maybe a week beforehand, that we were running a show. And the guy, the sergeant, I can remember it to this day, says to me, will there be a few tickets for the lads? It was all brand new then too, you see. Even the venue didn't have a restriction on how many numbers of people you had in. You know, you didn't even have to have a license. You didn't have to have a health and safety procedures. You know, all the technical, the tech stuff in terms of staging and lighting and all was all, it was all very dodgy and dangerous. There was no watermarks and tickets in those days. There was no scanning. So you were wide open for things. There was probably about, we probably had close to 30,000 people there. And we really, the bottom line of people who paid and things was about 23 or 24,000. We had a caravan at Dalymount Park. I couldn't get the money into the plastic sacks quick enough to get it out of the place. I think we sold about 5,000 or 6,000 tickets on the door on the day too. What was I, 21 or so, and I knew that real music fans were finding it very hard to get albums that were released even in the UK for maybe 3 weeks, 5 weeks, sometimes months after they came out over there. The shops here didn't have them. So I decided to open a shop, an underground record shop. I was just lucky to get the basement right on the corner of Nassau Street and Grafton Street. The rent was £3 a week, and the lady that owned the building said, I'll give you the electric light free. She didn't know that I was going to put in 20 coloured spots into the sound cellar to light up all the album displays and things. So for about 8 years, I had free electricity. Dublin was crowded with record shops. Cork was had no shops at all, hardly. It had one or two local ones, which were quite good, but they didn't have a main street shop. So Oliver Berry, who was my kind of mentor, he was a pretty famous showman man in his day and a very shrewd gambler and thing. He loaned me 500 quid and I opened for shop. Yeah, I had two in Dublin and I had four in Cork. They were great days and we used to sell all the tickets for Peter Aiken's dad and we were in Duke Street. We had done a Rory Gallagher ticket sale on the morning and we probably got maybe 400 or 500 tickets from Jim to sell. We had about $5,000, I remember. And I was in the shop in Duke Street, which was called a tape shop. It was just down from Davy Burns there. And suddenly there was a commotion in the street. And I came to the door of the shop and I heard a screeching of tires and a car taking off. These guys had come to rob ticket money, but they made a mistake. You see, ours was called a tape, T-A-P shop. Two doors up was the cake shop, C-A-K-E. They pulled up screeching outside the cake shop, ran in and held the cake shop up and got 200 quid while we were sitting on 5,000, two doors down. You know, I have never made lots of money out of gigs or whatever. I had a terrific living or whatever, but I'm not in that kind of league where people have millions and millions of pounds. I don't honestly understand why people want to hoard up so much money, but maybe I'm saying that because I don't have it. But generally, I've always felt that, you know, you've got to share things. If you didn't share things, you really didn't have a life, because that's what it's about. I've had a marvellous time and existence, and I hope to go on for another while yet.
Pat Egan there on 50 Years in Show Business. Come Christmas, Louis Scully was the reporter.